Good evening, punters, and welcome to another episode of the Tripod Wide World of Punting, where we talk about anything and everything in the world of punting that's going on at the moment. And boy, it's been a very busy week. We've got a lot to talk about on this week's show. We've got Melbourne Cup recap, we've got the State of Origin to get through. The US election is still going on at the moment, and that has been an absolute rollercoaster ride for a lot of punters in our group. Got a little segment at the end sharing with you guys some of our punting heartbreak. We've been punting for over a decade, so we've got a lot of stories, but we'll give you one or two. And then finally, we're going to finish it off with my Wide World Bet of the Week, because my one last week was a dud. Jacob, how are you?
Yeah, that's right. You gave out a bet and it was too good to be true. Sometimes when odds are too good to be true, it actually is. And you got overexcited and gave out the wrong party. So the bet you mentioned didn't actually exist. But some people might have bet the wrong party because the same states and odds was available. And then that looked like it was going to win. But we'll get into that.
No, the funny thing is the bet that I wanted to suggest, the Democrats winning all three, actually looks like that will win now. And, what are you going to do though?
And that's why you liked it, but that never was 4:30, unfortunately. But I know you're going to redeem yourself today. And we will talk about the election from a punting perspective, no political views here. And also, I should mention, we're going to talk about how we've gotten banned from the bookies because the people in the group asked for that segment. And punting heartbreak, we've got our own. And there's a couple of big stories. There's a bloke that lost $1 million on a minor stat correction. And there's a bloke in the Punt Hub group who's had 180K voided after the bookie originally paid it out. And we're just going to talk about that story if you hadn't already heard about it.
Indeed, we are. Let's start off with the Melbourne Cup, Jacob.
Well, I've got nothing much to say. I barely covered it this year because I was just like actually watching more NFL that day. I picked one horse. I had no luck. I literally have no bookie I can even put money in really and bet. So I was in a little joint venture where we went for a couple of first fours. You were in that as well. No luck, but I want to rewind because a week ago we had Jason Campbell on the pod.
Yep.
He said his favorite was Tiger Moth. I know it was the favorite in the cup, but hey, it still came second. He also gave us Ice Bath in the Golden Eagle at Rose Hill, I believe, Saturday.
Yes.
And 26-1 he gave it out a week ago. It closed into single figure odds. It got a little bit bumped, didn't get out in the clear early in the straight, and it loses in a photo finish by a nose.
Why, the
tiniest nose. I mean, you can't get much
nose.
Closer. Yeah, and that's rough, and I feel bad for the boys that got on that. You can't get much closer. Shout out to you Saturday because you also picked long
Johnny get angry.
The Derby. That's right.
I rarely bet on horses, but I mean, my Melbourne Cup was a disaster as well. Me and the missus went out for lunch, and we were watching every race, and we did not win a race for about the entire Melbourne Cup, essentially. And she's sitting there going, "This betting sucks. Like, it's not even fun." And then I said, maybe there's a bit of cheeky money lying around after the last race was run at Flemington. And then I hit two in a row and didn't tell her. All right. But I think all in all, a roughy 30-1 roughy wins. And I think probably a good result for the bookies. I mean, the Melbourne Cup generally is, but I'd say a 30-1 shot getting up is a pretty good result for the bookies. Let's move on to what we like the best. It is the NRL. State of Origin Game 1 happened last night, and the Maroons with the comeback win, 18 points to 14. Now, if you watched our preview, we had one best bet on the game, and unfortunately that one does not get up. But it was a really... I mean, it felt kind of strange to me having the NRL after the season. The State of Origin after the NRL season. I don't know about you, Jacob, but I was sitting there watching it, and it didn't quite have that State of Origin vibe about it. I don't know if it was because it was in Adelaide and the crowd was a little bit quieter or something, but is that the feeling you got watching it?
I think the build-up was just so much less than what we're used to. There was no weekend footy to have a discussion around. The Melbourne Cup was the day before, and then the US election, which we're going to get to. Like, it took a lot of the shine off the Origin game. And the players, they were some of them not quite fully match fit. There was definite rust. So we apologise. I loved our best bet. The odds dropped 20 cents by game day on our over 18.5. Other bookies all had the first half total 20.5. And did you hear the commentators? Oh, Adelaide, it's a fast track. Yep. It's going to be an epic game. Oh, the weather's perfect. They get a late sunset here. It's basically daytime conditions. And I was expecting free-flowing, but it was a rusty start with very good defence. New South Wales, very resilient in the first 15. They made some errors. And Queensland, had them under pressure. They never really opened up. And then when they scored a couple tries and there was a chance for the first half to open up, it was Queensland who held their nerve, didn't allow those floodgates to open. Of course, in the second half, which we'll get to, we saw those long-range tries that we thought we might. And we are Queenslanders, of course. So although, you know, we apologise for losing the best bet, we loved that comeback.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a funny one because when you're a dog, and we should say that the line moved from basically 8 when we did the pod up into double digits, 10 to 10.5 in some places before the game. And whenever you're cheering for a double-digit dog like the Maroons, you need them to convert those chances like they got at the start. An early New South Wales error, and then you basically get 5 sets in a row on the New South Wales line. You don't convert, can't score a try there. Then the Blues go straight down the other end and score with their first opportunity. And it's times like that where you're like, shit, they really needed to convert that. But then, you know, you had kind of hope, like Cordner goes off, Murray goes off, and Murray's now been ruled out for the series, which is a little bit of a blow for New South Wales. But I mean, it was just a tale of two halves. Like you said, Jacob, like every time New South Wales had the ball in the first half, they looked like they were going to score. And I don't know what happened at halftime, what Bennett said to the Maroons at halftime, but the teams basically flipped.
Yeah, give a huge amount of credit to the way that Queensland came out and applied themselves in the second half. But at the same time, New South Wales was extremely disappointing. And I wonder if they defended so well in the first half that they felt we're up 10 with a superior team. If we just keep turning them away in the second half, opportunities will come for us. It'll just happen. And they came out and played not to lose, whereas Queensland came out with a true underdog mentality and came out to win. And I think that Queensland swung the game with their defensive intensity. And the key moment for me is the 47th minute. Queensland's still down 10-0. Queensland's asserting their dominance in defense. New South Wales plays the ball fourth tackle on their own, like 25, and they spread it, and they spread it out to the Fox. And it's Kurt Capewell who flies out of the line and pancakes at O'Carr.
Yep.
Nathan Cleary has to kick the ball from his own 20. Brimson gets over the halfway, and that was the field position battle. Queensland was winning, and they capitalised. They score a try within a couple of sets of that, and another try about 3 or 4 minutes later that then puts them, you know, on the front foot and in the attack. And even then, I don't feel like the Blues woke up until they were down 18-0, and 18-10.
Not enough time left.
And then, you notice, then all of a sudden, Blues were flying out of the line and getting bodies in the tackle, but they weren't defending that. It's not just their attack; they weren't defending that way earlier in the game when they had, you know, had the game by the scruff of the neck.
And we should say as well, like we mentioned in the preview pod, like Queensland, it's like a kicking for the conversions. Like it's like you've got Cleary, the best kicker in the comp, versus, you know, we didn't even know who was going to kick, and it ends up being Cherry Evans. They get a penalty basically right in front. He sprays it 100 metres to the right. And then we should say it was 3 tries all after that, and it's 18-14.
I actually think that is the biggest upset of all time. DCE kicking for goal, and so was Cleary. They both had 3 attempts, and DCE kicked 3 from 3.
Yep.
And Nathan Cleary, the best in the game, I think, kicks 1 from 3, and that's after, as you said, DCE missed from in front. And when he took that shot from in front, I'm like, oh, I want to go for the try there, but okay, you want to get your nose in front 2-0. When he missed that badly, I just thought, what the fuck have you been doing for the last month? Like, Manly didn't make the finals. You know you're the first choice kicker. You're the captain. Has he not been practicing? But boy, for him to nail, and the first try's a bit, little bit wide. The next two tries are from the sideline with wind to contend with, which he used his advantage.
Yeah.
That's the difference in the game. You're absolutely right.
I will ask you as well, Jacob. So you mentioned Kurt Capewell and how well he did, and we talked in the preview pod, and you should have seen all the comments in the groups and on all sorts of pages, just absolutely ripping Kurt Capewell, shouldn't be in the team, how bad it was, you know, the Brenko Lee got injured and he had to slot in. And I agree with you, I thought that he was Queensland's best. But how mad are you, Jacob, that last year you picked Cherry Evans for man of the match and he deserves it, and then he gets it in this game where I don't think
actually,
he did.
Yeah, actually it was game 3, which was a dead rubber, but 2018, where DCE, we picked him man of the match,
that's
gave
right,
him out of the
yeah.
pod. I think he was $19, you could odd boost to 21. He was the best on the field that night at Suncorp Stadium. Unfortunately, there was a guy called Billy Slater who already had the trophy engraved before he stepped out onto the field. He got it. So redemption for DCE, I can't argue with it. I thought he played exceptional from halfback. His kicking game was great. I loved the way him and Munster, and even Ben Hunt as well, they threatened the line. They were like skipping in the line. So they kept the defense guessing. Like you never knew if they were going to run themselves, try and skip. They were even willing to offload, or they were going to go sideways. Like I like that because you're making the defense make decisions. The more decisions they got to make, they're going to get some wrong. And you talked about Capewell. You talked about DCE. I mean, I thought either of them would have been a fair man of the match. I think Gagai, you know, was close to one of the best on the ground. Munster, The man off a bend up was exceptional. And I'll even,
good.
If we're talking about
apparently
high performance,
threw up in the first half.
Yeah, and he looked, he had that look about him like he was weary, but his moments, as we know, and he has the winning try. And sure, there's luck involved, but you make your own luck. And a guy who I will give a rap as well, and there were question marks about Capewell. For me, the question mark for Capewell was playing him out of position, but you know, but I know he's a good player, held his own, and Wayne Bennett believed in him. Jake Friend,
yep.
I want to give him a rap.
Except for
I
the forward
thought
passes.
This would be more of an open, yeah, and he had his errors. Which, you know, I think New South Wales can't blame this game on their poor completions because Queensland made errors that let New South Wales off the hook too. I think that was pretty even. Like, Queensland had unforced errors like forward passes from dummy half.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You and I expected more of an open affair. And I think we would have liked Harry Grant in there because he has a higher ceiling and better maybe attacking player. But it was a lot more of an arm wrestle. And I've heard a lot of people that are saying, you know, it wasn't an entertaining game. And true enough, it wasn't super high scoring and flashy, but in a great arm wrestle game, I have to give all the credit in the world to Jake Friend, who led the tackle count.
Yes.
And you know, is a great leader and tightened up the middle and deserved his spot and you know, now I think should be there for the rest of the series, no question.
I will push back a little bit on that because I do think, like, you know, that Queensland team, you watch those four or five sets in a row that they had, they basically looked like they threw nothing at New South Wales there. I mean, they had that one inside pass to Brimson that looked like it was a slight chance. But I think those are the moments where a guy like Harry Grant, you know, you could maybe convert one of those sets into a try. Let me ask you one thing, Jacob, and it's the ending. And it's a bit controversial. You know, obviously, New South Wales gets a full set of six with about a minute left in the Queensland half. And I think for me, it starts with about 50 seconds left. I think Papali is lying all over the ruck for about 5 seconds. They don't give a sin bin. They just call six again. Then Kalfusi lies all over for about another 5 seconds. He gets the sin bin. He takes his time getting off the field about a minute to give the Queenslanders a rest. And then I know that the clocks don't line up perfectly, but you know, it looks like when Teddy got tackled on that final tackle, he would have enough time to play the ball. What did you make of that last sequence? And, you know, is there anything we can do to kind of stop that? Not really, is there?
Yeah, it's hard because we are Queenslanders. We benefited from it. So I was cheering a couple of things. And I must be wrong, but it seemed to me like was Sutton blew full time before the siren went.
Yes.
Which makes no sense to me. Surely if they could play the ball and throw, you know, throw the pass and the siren goes,
and
you know, then
the
you let them play.
After
the
pass.
Yes, yes. And the other part of it was a clear second professional foul by Cherry Evans, not only laying on the ruck, but he putting his hand on the ball. Now, I think what the ref has to do right there, blow the whistle. Obviously, that's going to, you know, even if the siren goes, that you're going to be allowed to take the tap off a penalty.
Yep.
And you send Cherry Evans. And I would have been shitting myself, even though only one play, if it was 13 on 11 for one play and you had Damian Cook and bloody, you know, Cody Walker and Tedesco out there. So I think in that sense, New South Wales did get dudded, but if they're going to use that as the excuse for losing and not the fact that they were so underwhelming in the second half, then that's their own fault. Let's talk about New South Wales. Luke Keary was kept very quiet, and I don't know if he got hurt during the game.
Yep.
I thought Cody Walker actually coming onto the field and roaming actually did well.
Yep.
You know, I thought Teddy was kept pretty well under wraps, and then I saw the stats. He still had 300 metres and six tackle breaks, and I think that's a testament to the player he is. You just expect that from him now. Jack White, who's like, you know, was just crowned best player of the season, was also super quiet. And again,
didn't get much pill out there. Yeah.
Again, but limped off. So, like, I don't know. I was thinking radical. Do you drop Keary, play Whiten at six, his natural position where he dominates, and bring Stephen Crichton onto left centre?
Yeah.
And that's probably a team that Queensland doesn't want to face. But that injury might change things. Cameron Murray, as you mentioned, that's going to be a change. I presume New South Wales picks Isaiah Yeo. So do you want to close with any thoughts about the New South Wales team, and do you have a solution for that final clock controversy at the end?
I don't really, and although we discussed this previously, Jacob, where essentially, you know, if you were given away a penalty within the 10, you'd get the sin bin, or you'd get sit off for that, you know, that next set of six, and I know that would be crazy if you're sort of like rugby union, went overtime, but just gave them an extra set of six if they're going to do something like that. But yeah, pretty radical stuff. But another option that no one's talking about is you could bring Luai back in to partner Cleary in the halves as well. I mean, we've seen what they've done all season long. But, yeah, massive win by the Maroons. And it sets us up for a really good series. And now I'm considering going to Game 3 because I thought it would be 2-0 to the Blues.
Yeah, get it together. And we should say, we're not going to share any thoughts on Game 2. We'll be back Sunday, 7 p.m. Daylight Savings Time with our Game 2 preview. We'll let the dust settle. We'll see who gets picked and we will search and see if we can find any winning bets for that one.
Now let's talk about something else. It is the US election, and you know what I didn't realize, Jacob? How many people care in Australia about the US election? How many people bet on it? Let me just start by saying, I mean, it's not quite over yet. Looks like Biden's going to get over the line here. But the largest bet on event in history, nearly $3 billion Australian dollars bet on the election, which is by far the biggest amount on
But is that converted to Australian? Is that worldwide? Are you saying by Australians?
No.
That's traded by Betfair, which is international.
So I saw on Betfair this morning that they were getting up towards $1 billion had been traded on the election, which is just absolute madness. But, you know, I never thought that we'd get so much traction. We put up an election thread. There was about 1,000 comments in there from people betting either side. And I mean, you know, this is just a crazy thing to bet on because you watch a game of sport, and I guess you could compare it to yesterday's game. You know, New South Wales about $1.05 to win at halftime, and then Queensland comes roaring back, and that's pretty much exactly what we saw with the election.
It is funny. You can actually draw the parallels that you would have given Biden almost no chance based on the way that the live odds moved. And I don't know if you've put up the graphic.
I can throw it up now, and
because it was bizarre. But
very
I will
bizarre.
Say, so the odds basically. On election day, Donald Trump was around $3, maybe
correct.
$2.75
yes.
to $3, Biden $1.40. And usually, betting odds are a pretty good indication of how an election's going to go. Now, 4 years ago, Trump won as like a $5 underdog. So it's not obviously a perfect
More
size.
Like 10,
if it was,
yeah.
you could always bet the favorite and always win. But it's a fair reflection. You just mentioned it. $1 billion traded. If the betting odds are wrong and people have got better prediction tools for the result than the election odds, people could massively make profit out of that because they could just use their better tool or go to one of those prediction sites and say, oh, this percentage chance of Biden or Trump to win, well, I'll just bet, you know, the one that's got the highest odds better than the probability reflects.
Yep.
But so I really do believe that the odds do reflect fairly an accurate reflection of the probability in that moment. But the way that it crashed from Donald Trump on the morning of the election being $2.80 to down as low as I saw $1.12, well, I've never seen a market move like that and then that favorite not win.
Yeah,
you know, when
yeah.
it swings like that, I was texting people going, well, I know nothing about the politics, but he's won. It doesn't crash like this. And then it just started creeping back. And by when I went to bed last night, it was like 50-50.
Yeah.
And you have to feel a bit sick in the stomach if you're on Trump and you got that close to like almost thinking he'd won to then the odds starting to go the other way. And of course, by this morning, it was $1.10 Biden. And I don't know if you've checked in the last hour. I mean, sports
paid out. He's $1.05.
Yeah, and they said they were holding, I think, like 90 million on Trump. And, you know, maybe they weren't holding the same volume on Biden, but they've still, that's a big mistake to make. If you pay out early, as we saw, they paid out like 5 million on Cam Smith in the NRL Grand Final. So it's likely that Biden wins. So from a betting perspective, people will say, oh, the odds don't mean anything. The bookies try and suck you in on one side.
I disagree that
they try and do that because people can take advantage of that. If you're going to try and suck people in on one side, then smart people will just bet the other side and make a profit.
No, you're exactly right. And a lot of people kind of think, oh, that, you know, the bookies are setting trap odds or whatever. But like you said, you've got millions, billions wagered on this. So, you know, obviously the limits are quite high in something like this. So they're not just going to throw up Donald Trump at $5 to try and entice some punters when, you know, there's smart people out there that are going to drop a mozza on it. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, don't want to get political or anything, but this was the craziest thing I've ever seen in terms of live betting. And let me just say something else. I didn't bet on this, but geez, isn't it a fun event to bet on? You get over a day of, you know, ups and downs, and, you know, I guess people would have had multiple heart attacks along the way. Like, that's some odds fluctuation
that
you
never see.
And a lot of people
have US election origin multis.
Yes.
So what a double roller coaster. And, you know, good luck to anyone who had the Biden Queensland combination, although, you know, it's not official as far as I know, sitting here. We record about 2 or 3 hours before we go. You might see this, but you never know. I can't say for certain Biden's going to win based on how much it swung yesterday, but it certainly looks that way.
And the funny thing is, apparently it's coming down to Wisconsin and some other state, and those were the two states in the multi that
Pennsylvania
I mistakenly gave out. So anyway, let's move on. Jacob, punting heartbreak. And we've had a lot of this, and obviously a lot of punters have had a lot of this. But let's start off with this one, Jacob. It's a really interesting story. There was a US punter, and you can maybe run us through this one, but he thought he had $1 million in his pocket, and then a late stat correction took it right back out.
Yeah, $1 million. So this one was, I think it was FanDuel or one of those daily fantasy. It may not have been, and basically daily fantasy is you pay an entry and I think you can buy multiple entries. And it was a one game, like Monday Night Football in America, and you pick the best lineup. So you can pick like any player on either team and, combinations. And whoever comes up with the best combination, in terms of their stats generating the highest score, wins the pool, $1 million. And in this game, it was the Bears against the Rams, and he had the Chicago Bears defense as one of his players, and they got a sack late in the game and basically generated a point for him that made him first place, and he won $1 million. And he said he was all pumped, and he went and took his dog for a walk just to calm down. When he came back, his winnings was about, I can't remember, like $3,000 or something.
Because they had
corrected the stat and said the Chicago Bears didn't get a sack. It was just a regular tackle. And the funny thing, people who don't follow NFL won't really get this, but it's a judgment call on whether you think the quarterback was deliberately running or just tackled in the pocket. And they judge it on whether other players are blocking. So a subjective call on a tiny miscellaneous little thing that didn't affect the outcome of the game cost him probably whatever, like a point on his lineup. Oh. But when you've got like, 100,000 people entering in this comp, it relegated him to like 18-way tie for sixth or something.
And so we should add, because a lot of people will be like, oh, well, they're going to do that stat correction so they don't have to pay out. But, I mean, we should say it's a pool. So it was independent,
somebody else would have won the million.
Right, that's still
heartbreaking.
Oh, absolutely brutal. There's another one that we've got, and this is a bit closer to home. This happened recently. We've got an Aussie bloke, and he's actually pretty active in some of the forums here. But he had three same-game multis on a baseball game. And, saw that the odds were quite high. I think he had, two leg same game multis, like laying 3.5 runs with one team and taking the over. And,
in baseball.
Yeah, in baseball. And the odds were massive. So look, I think all three of the same game multis won, Jacob, to net him $180,000 of winnings. They paid it out, and then they came back and they said, actually, we had the incorrect odds, and then took the money back off him and paid him out at what they said were the correct odds, which were obviously much, much lower.
Yeah, he saw the winnings come in. So because it was like two or three multis, he literally only put on $50, like a $10 bet here, 20, 20 here, and he won $60,000. But then the next game that was linked to those came in, and like another $125,000 came in, and he instantly withdrew. And it was like a few hours later, he got a call that, your withdrawal transaction has been cancelled and your account has been rebalanced and it was a mistake. And he's actually now taken them to court, and it's in the Punt Hub group. And I spoke to Andrew and asked if he doesn't mind us, just talking about it. We're not going to, litigate the situation, but just share our thoughts. And it's an interesting topic for all punters, finding mistakes. And the debate that the Tab is making is it was a clear mistake. And look, he had like a couple of same game multis in MLB, which look a couple of roughly 50-50 markets.
Right.
And the odds were like 2,000 to one. So I'm not going to, play dumb and say, he didn't know that wasn't fair. But I will say this, with the same game multi, it's actually really impossible or very debatable to argue what
to
the odds should
odds.
Be.
Right.
When
right.
it's, yeah, when it's a single market, you've got odds on both sides. You can compare to what every other bookie is trading that price at. And if the odds are clearly way higher, they can pretty easily say, well, look, it was a mistake price and you benefited from it. Or if you chucked it in a multi, you can still look at each leg. But with same gamers, with every multi, you've got correlation.
You've got
inverse correlation
no matter what the legs are.
But you've got
bit.
Negative correlation too,
course,
where two things could actually magnify the odds. So, look, I'll say this. A lot of bookies have same game odds calculators, and a lot of people can't actually do the arithmetic in their head. And look, we're not perfect, but we think we are really good. I've got a pretty good judgment of, like, you tell me a bunch of combinations in a game, and I'll tell you what the odds should be. And that's how we find value. And you guys know we've found a lot of same game multi-value. But a lot of people can't do that in their head.
Oh, yeah.
And they get ripped off because they just think, oh, I'm going to pick five things to happen in this game. And, oh, okay, it's telling me it's 50-1. Oh, sweet. And often the bookies will give you horrible prices on these same gamers. And they're not, you know, you're not going to get to claim that back and say, oh, it was a mistake odds. It was in your favor. The odds are always in the bookies' favor. And then on a rare occasion where their calculator, it's not you making the odds, it's them. Their calculator makes the odds way too big. You put the bet on, they accept it. And the other part of this is, if it had lost, he doesn't find out they were voided till a few hours later.
Yes.
So even though I can't try and say, like, he didn't know that the odds were wrong, I think it's just completely unfair that a bookie can void your odds way after the fact. They should have at least contacted him before the game, or at the very least during, so he didn't have that heartbreak. So I can see both sides. I will say, punters don't have all the rights. When you sign up to a bookie, you accept the terms and conditions, which does cover them. But I'm a punter at heart, and I say fuck the bookies, to be honest. So I do lean with the punter in this one. What about you?
And it's a funny one because, I mean, we were the same way, Jacob, when we first started punting in our... Well, I'm not going to say when we first started punting, but let's say when we first started getting betting apps, you know, in our late teens, early 20s, and we didn't know about any of this stuff. And I'll get to that in my story, in my punting heartbreak story as well. But you see in a lot of these groups online, you know, they'll say... Oh, fuck it, if you can get the bet on, they have to pay it out. And that's what we thought when we first started punting, and we got into, you know, a lot of arguments, a lot of fights with the bookies because of it. And you live and you learn, and once you've been betting for a decade like us, you know that there's T's and C's, and you know the go, you know, whether it's right or wrong. And, you know, sometimes they, obviously a million bets coming in, sometimes they maybe can't get a chance to void it beforehand, but you make a good point, Jacob, that, you know, if it plays on and it lost, would they have refunded him? Probably not. But and yeah, it's one
of
those things.
It's a word of warning with mistake prices. If you find odds, and we've all done it, I think we've all stumbled across odds that were a mistake.
100%.
Before. All right, you've got to
just
think.
Just last night on the State of Origin.
What was the mistake odds?
Well, remember they flipped the Queensland and New South Wales team totals.
Oh, yeah, like one of the bookies had the wrong team total for each team. So, like, you know, it was a 7 points off, right? And in the grand final, Sportsbet accidentally put Penrith at $12 for a period there, right? So you find these mistake odds. Now, if you bet it, obviously it's in your favour and you want to put a big amount on it. But if you bet it, there's still the risk. It still loses. Just because it's a great price, it might still lose. So you've still got to factor that in. You've also got to factor in you might win. And then they might void it.
Yes.
But you might lose and it not void. So it's like you've got to kind of do a double equation in your head. And, you know, I tend to think just like don't put too much on it because
Correct.
You never know. It could be actually a free roll for the bookie in that if it loses, then the hard luck. And if it wins, you don't get that great price anyway.
Exactly.
Maybe
right.
Just chuck it in a multi. So it's something that punters need to consider. There's no guarantees even once the money is placed.
Well, so we should add just one more quick one because I know... that obviously in the grand final, Sportsbet hung Penrith at 12.25 for like 5 minutes. You
instead
know,
instead of 2.25.
Instead of 2.25, a bunch of punters got on. Obviously, they didn't win in the end if they let the bet ride, but I know a lot that cashed out for thousands of dollars, and they were actually, it seems, allowed to keep that money. I haven't taken it back off them yet, so.
I hope Sportsbet's not listening.
Oh, shh. All right, Jacob, your turn. Fire away.
Okay, my heartbreak story to compare to these guys, it's not that bad. But it's the time I won a car, and people who know me personally would have known this just because, like, we put it all over Facebook, as you do when you're, like, can't remember, like, probably 25 years old.
Oh, that's the best.
And you win a car, you know, you get pretty excited. And it was me, mate, the Bareback Bandit. I was actually at a pub, which I won't name, but we were there, and you had the opportunity to win a car with, like, raffle tickets that you got when you bought drinks. And long story short, I won, but I had already had a handshake agreement with the Bareback Bandit. If either of us won, we split it, which is fine. I'm happy with that. We won a car. It was a Mazda 2, you know, shiny lime green thing. You know, we looked it up, worth over 20K, right? We're pretty happy with that. We went home that night after, you know, shouting numerous drinks and partying hard and both basically calling in sick the next day at work because we won a car. And after putting on Facebook, you know, Europe trip paid for and all this, we turned up the next day and they said, oh, you know, it's not a new car. Turns out, oh, we looked a bit closer. It's got dents in it. We get inside. It's done over 200,000 Ks on the odometer. And it didn't have a roadworthy. And we had to drive to get it. Ends up being worth about $3,000. So while, you guys might say, oh, a win's a win, That was one where I thought I'd won a bit more and it was taken away from me. You've got a heartbreak story as well.
Oh, my God, I love that story so much. Yeah, so I've got mine. Hang on a second. I've got the wrong little thing here. Oh, Christ almighty. Give me a second here. All right.
But, yeah, my story of winning, everyone says, hey, you won a car. And I say, no, I won half a second-hand car.
We should make it known. You should make it known that this is like a little while ago where like 20 grand or 10 grand each was a shitload of money for us back then. So you were absolutely stoked you were getting 10
grand.
Still
is to me now.
Well, yeah, of course, but you know.
Got mouths to feed.
Even worse. So I'm going to go back and rewind the clock a long, long time. And like I said, when we first started betting, me and Jacob, we didn't know how the bookies worked. We didn't know that they could take a bet back off you. Didn't know that they could take winnings back off you. Me and you, we went to a house party. I think this would have been, you know, just after high school at some point. And, you know, we were relatively drunk, slept over at a mate's place, and woke up in the middle of the night, couldn't sleep. And as you do, or as I used to do, you know, check for mistakes on bookies, you know, in the middle of the night and see if I could find any money lying on the ground. I found it in EuroLeague basketball. I remember the team like it was yesterday. Laboral Cookster. And it was a pick'em game on every other site, and they were, I think, hanging them at $8 to win the first half. I won't say where, but anyway, I loaded the gun, $1,000 bet, and that was a lot to me back then. Like, I'd never put $1,000 on a bet before. Put $1,000 on that one at $8, hedged back on another site, and the $8 bet gets up. I get paid the $8,000 into my account. I'm all stoked in the morning. I drive home. I get home. I have a missed call. It's from the bookie. They say, you know, can you give us a call back? I'm thinking, what the heck is this? I don't call them back. And then they call me again. I answer and they say, look, we're going to have to revert to the true odds, which were $2. So instead of winning a lot of money, I broke even on that investment. Actually, I lost money because I hedged more on the other side. That's right. Dear Lord.
That hurts. And people asked us, you guys in the group voted for a segment and you guys wanted to hear about getting banned by the bookies, which segues quite nicely because I think you putting that bet on tipped this particular bookie off that you were a little bit a bit sneaky.
I was done shortly after
and,
that.
Yeah, it was it curtains after that? And my story, and I've got a few, but I'll just pick William Hill. It links with Origin. It was the 2017 season. I still had a William Hill account. We went 66% on NRL, so we were cleaning up. My year started really well, or about mid-year. I had a bonus bet I won $15,000 off, which included the Boston Celtics as an $18 head-to-head underdog in a playoff game at the Cavaliers. And the Celtics were down like 20, came back and won the game on a buzzer-beating three. That won my multi. And then with the $15K I had to turn over, we were spot on with all three Origin games that series. New South Wales getting the upset in game one, Queensland coming back and getting the upset in game two, and Queensland winning game three. It was the same season we won the 100-1 multi that you guys might remember as well, with the final leg being against the Warriors. And usually we give you guys awesome multis and we're not on ourselves. I was on that myself, which made it even sweeter.
Yep.
I used to have a trick where I could bet on underdogs and play the my line and pick like an underdog that might be $3 to win, but if you took them minus 1.5 points, it was like $4.50. So you're magnifying the odds on an underdog.
Good old days.
I was betting on team score bands, and the Storm were like unbeatable in 2017. I was betting on Storm opponents to score 0-10. These days, if you bet like a team to score 0-10 and they're an underdog, it pays like $2.20,
right.
$2.50.
Yep.
Back then, it was $4 to $6. And I looked back because I remember it was glory days. The Storm won 6 of their final 9 matches, holding the opponent for 0-10. So I was cleaning up and I was sailing under the radar because I was multiing all my nice combinations, you know? And then it was one day I went to chuck a multi on and it said multi betting disabled. And this is how they get you, because then they reduce their liability. You can't bet a multi. All right, fine, I'll just bet what I like as a single. My singles were reduced. I couldn't bet to win more than $20 or $50 on a single bet. That was it for me, but good times. Willie Hill, we hardly knew you.
Yeah, it was a good one. Oh, some good time. Back in the day, it was so much easier, wasn't it, Jacob? I mean, remember when Willie Hill had chased the ace every single game of the tournament, $1 cash for every ace? It's like you could turn 1,000 into 10,000 without even trying, you know? Anything else you wanted to add about the...
That's it, bring mate. It home, mate, with Wide World Ooh, Bet of the Week.
All right, let's do this. Last week was an absolute debacle. I read the bet wrong, and sorry for anyone that got on it mistakenly, but, I mean, I rewatched it. I clearly said Democrats, and, I mean, I know how it can be confusing. Anyway, this week, we will be going to the UFC, and my boy, Glover Teixeira, to win in the main event over Thiago Santos. Best odds are $3.02 on Sportsbet. Glover is an absolute monster, Jacob. You know how old this guy is? 41 years old. And wow. He's like a late bloomer. Everyone says, you know, oh my God, you can't win UFC when you're that old. The dude is on a fight streak. He seems like a fine bottle of wine, gets better with age. And let's not forget, Thiago Santos, no spring chicken, 36 years old as well. Teixeira, he's, you know, made it very clear. He wants the title, you know, and he's obviously doesn't have, you would think, many years left in him, but honestly, this guy won me a lot of money last time I bet on it, last time he fought, and he looks in tip-top shape, so $3.02 in the main event on the weekend. I think that's going to give you a decent chance of a triple-up.
And if a bloke can get it done at 41, it's going to give us hope that we're, you know, not completely over the hill.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, last week I talked about GOATs and, you know, LeBron James and Cam Smith and Tom Brady, and I forgot to mention even like Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, you know, Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, there's serious GOATs going around. They're all north of 30, and they're all still getting it done, which is awesome for sports fans that people can prolong their careers. Hopefully this guy can too, yes, and bring it home indeed. $3.02 odds. That's our show for tonight. I think we went over half an hour, but upcoming shows, NFL, and we're going to include more NFL chat in the weekly Wide World of Punting. Don't worry about that, because there's still many more weeks of that to go. We're going to look at the contenders, MVP. But our Week 9 preview is on Saturday at midday, Daylight Savings Time. And then, of course, I mentioned before, Origin 2 preview, Sunday night, 7 p.m. And then we will be back. If you enjoy the Wide World of Punting podcast, I hope you do. We'll be back a week from now. So, again, we'll place it 7 p.m. on Thursday night so we can chat about Origin 2. We might be chatting about a Queensland series victory.
And talking about a Queensland sweep finishing off in Brisbane. Thanks again for tuning in, guys. Gamble responsibly, and we'll catch you Saturday at noon for an NFL breakdown of Week 9. See you then.
Lego.